Lone Pine, California, March 16th, 1980. I propose this morning to give another discourse on the subject of death. First, as to the general picture, our sources with respect to the subject matter of the transition which men call death are as follows. First, certain material in the Mahatma letters, to which I attach the highest reliability. Certain additional material in the Ocean of Theosophy and in the Key to Theosophy. Then, also from the Tibetan Book of the Dead. And finally, Moody's work entitled Life After Life, which is based upon certain reports of individuals who have died clinically as by reason of the heart stopping, but who were subsequently brought back to life within a period of not more than 20 minutes, and so that they could continue to live at least for some time. In the case of some of these individuals, there were experiences remembered that repeat many of the features that are to be found in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, which is, in fact, a very considerable interest. Now the question arises, how can processes beyond the transition called death be known? The answer is that there are certain men, no, or women, who are known as adepts, who have awakened and mastered resources both of a cognitive kind and of an executive kind that for the most part lie latent in the rest of us, and that with certain of these resources they are able to pass through the process of dying without actually dying themselves, and thus observe and experience what happens. That is the basis of the knowledge reported to us. Now I'll go through the steps as understood by me, both from these general sources and ultimately giving some specific information which I have received lately. When a person is pronounced dead because his heart stops and the breath stops, actually he is still within the body but is focused in the brain, where he is going through his own life story, evidently for the purpose of impressing it upon some subtle medium that will carry it. Actually, the entity has not left the body when he is pronounced dead. It may take some time before he so leaves. I've had statements from different individuals as to what the maximum time might be. One called Irma Pound, whom some of you know, said that 12 hours was enough. But I knew a doctor in the Hollywood area who had the power of traveling in the astral and had extended medical experience. And he said it could take up to 36 hours. At any rate, I have compromised on the assumption of a 24-hour period, that the individual who has stopped breathing and whose heart has stopped and all vital functions cease should lie quietly in state for a period of 24 hours, that there should be no adverse psychical disturbances in his vicinity. Particularly, there should be no manifestation of grief on the part of those who are left behind. As it is impossible to control a feeling of grief, because one naturally grieves when a loved one departs, the method which I found was adequate is to, as it were, seal off that feeling so it is not outwardly manifested. In the case of the passing of Gertrude, I did this, and I checked later and found that it had been successfully achieved. The reason for this is that the effect of grieving can hold the individual that is departing in the vicinity, whereas properly they should move away from that immediate vicinity. Later they cease to be in immediate affective contact with their friends, and then one is no longer obligated to seal off his feelings. Now, when the individual actually departs from the body, usually some hours after the body has been pronounced dead, there are different ways that he can depart. In the Tibetan Book of the Dead, some ways are very undesirable. Others are desirable. And it is generally said that any departure above the solar plexus is of a desirable sort. But the most desirable is by the sort of tube known as a Brahma Randa, which leads to a departure from the top of the head. Incidentally, in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, it says that if one were to leave by the ear, which seems to be a possible way, he would go into a zone where there are entities exclusively interested in the development of music, which would be probably a nice enough zone, but too much one-sided. In other words, it is implied that the mode of departure affects the zone into which one enters. The most commanding way, however, would be through the Brahma Randa and the top of the head. Now, in the life after life of Moody, there's a frequent reference to a movement through a dark area, sometimes called a tube or channel. Even one spoke of it as a sort of sewer-like land, or as a movement through a deep, dark valley with mountain ranges on the sides, with a light at the end of the passage. And this passage may be very rapid. Irma told me that it is not an unpleasant, but rather a benign darkness that one is in while going through that passage. Beyond, he comes into a zone of light which may be extremely bright. In life after life, there is a frequent reference to a very early meeting of something that has been called, by at least one of those who went reported, a being of light. In the Tibetan Book of the Dead, it is said that at the moment of death, one meets the clear light. The question arose in my mind as to whether the clear light and the being of light were references to the same event. I put this question to Irma, and she said they were actually references to the same event, which I suspected was the case. This being of light seems to have a way of communicating with the one that has departed and submits him to a life examination which occupies only a very brief time, although the whole life is reviewed before him. Certain elements that may be more or less impure in that life are submitted to a process of purification or deletion from the consciousness of the individual. And in some cases, the problem of purification may be considerable. In other cases, it may be minor. The zone in which one then finds himself is called, in the Mahatma letters and also in other theosophic sources, as Kama Loka. It is a world, a place, where, however, the principle of desire is particularly strong. It also has several levels in it, reaching from certain levels that are low in light value to other levels that are high in light value. The immediate levels around the dwelling where one may have passed in is a possible zone for an individual to become attached to it, if it is his place of living. And he may actually, for an enormous length of time, actually linger in that vicinity. And that is the basis for the experience reported by some sensitives of a haunted house. This is a very undesirable position for the deceased to be in. He should be encouraged by the thought of those who are his friends to go on in deeply, and there should be no clinging to the individual at this time, for the magnetic attraction of affection can cross the barrier over to the other side. Now, the experiences of different individuals is quite various on this level. We have those who are suicides, those who are deeply involved in evil, like murderers, and you have in varying degrees, the vast mass of human beings who are neither very good nor very bad. And then you have those in ascending order of having lived virtuous lives until ultimately you reach to the saints and the sages and the adepts. The experiences of these different groups is quite various. You also have individuals who have lived long and those who have had their life cut off early, as by accident or by being killed in war and the like. When the karmic span of life would have been very much longer. For instance, say an individual was born with a karmic lifespan on the order of 70 years, but by accident or having been killed in war, he dies at 20. He has to live out the rest of that 70-year period. That means 50 years are lived out on this plane of Kamaloka, when at the end of that period he goes through the second death. In the case of the suicides, the experience is said to be very uncomfortable indeed. In point of fact, if a person lost a loved one and then as a result committed suicide, and there was one case reported in Moody's book of this sort, where his attempt at suicide didn't prove to be fully successful, but he had the beginning part of the experience. And he reported back that he was in a very miserable sort of place and not anywhere near where his wife was. So that would be a most unwise action for anyone to engage in. You cannot get to your beloved by the road of suicide. That is a path of folly. Now those who have died by accident before their time, it is said, go into a kind of sleep in which they live a dream life, more or less happy, until their cycle is finished, and then they go on into the deeper state. Result is that when one goes over to Kamaloka, if he is very near the end of his life cycle, he may be in Kamaloka only for a few minutes, and if in the other case where he's cut off early, he may be there for many years. In the example I gave, it'd be a period on the order of 50 years before completing the process. Now, in the first death, the one that we recognize here, the outer gross body is dropped. And apparently, the pranic principle, insofar as it's related to the gross body, also ceases. Although whatever of life principle is required further on must in some way continue. Now the ghost body drops and it ultimately disintegrates. That's the law of nature. Either by decay or by the cleaner method of cremation, which I think is the better method. And at least it cuts off any magnetic attraction for the body rather early, so that the inner entity is not drawn down by it. Cremation is very common in India, and I rather favor it. That method was employed in connection with Gertrude, and it is what I wish to have applied to myself when I go. After 24 hours lying in state, then going to the cremation. Now, beyond this, when the interlude in Kamaloka is completed, the entity goes to what is now called not a location or a place or a world, but into a state of consciousness known as Devakami. That is, if he is an individual that isn't too bad, doesn't have any more than the ordinary range of sins or faults after they have been cleaned up, or if he is predominantly virtuous, especially so, reaching on up to sainthood, sagehood, or to adeptship. The adepts have a different pattern. Then he enters those with the predominance of good enter into Devakami. Those with the predominance of evil enter into Avicca, which is a place of suffering. Not much is said about Avicca, and of course we're not, none of us, I hope, are attracted to that place. But in Devakami, which is a state of consciousness, it is said to be a state of unalloyed bliss. Apparently, the mind can here reproduce the environment that he may have enjoyed in his past life so that he could have it replaced there, or he could build an ideal environment. Yes, I drew a picture once of one who had passed in having a dwelling place that was fitted his ideal with library and means of research, surrounded by a forest with brooks in it and animals that were entirely harmless and so on. This would be a mental construction, and one would dwell in those moments which were the most exalted moments of his life, expanded into a great variety of developments, like a theme of music which could be developed in many ways, such as Bach's development of fugal forms in many, many forms. There be thus different patterns in which these ideal moments could be developed into various interests, and all in a setting of a bliss beyond our present power to imagine it. For how long? Quite a various period. For an individual who has very little in his life that is worth saving, it might be quite brief. For one who has a very substantial development of virtue, yet who is less than an adept, it might be for a very long period. The figure on average is, and this is average, 1,500 years, corresponding to a life cycle here, which is generally under 100 years. It would mean that corresponding to the more or less disagreeable conditions of life out here, the period of bliss is very, very much longer. And that is quite obviously the most ideal portion of the total cycle. After having worked out the fruit of the causes set here, established here, for this is said to be the plane in which we plant the seeds, the causal seeds, that lead to a harvest reaped in Devakam. When that harvest is completely finished, then karmic law demands a new birth. He's drawn to his future parents. In due course, enters into the womb. Usually this being a period of unconsciousness for him. But I was once told by Senior that at least once in every life, the life in the womb must be lived through consciously so that one actually knows what is going on. I met recently one person, some of you may remember, it was Rachel, who knew when she was born, experienced the whole thing, and it was an instrument birth, and she said, extremely painful because of the action of the instrument, something to be taken into account, which is tends to be a verification that this can be a conscious experience, and one subsequently remembered by her. But most of us, I think you will agree, do not remember the process of being born out here. In fact, we generally don't remember much of anything of the first year or two. Although it is possible, I happen to have one little memory that seems to go back to the first year. It was something connected with the experience of darkness, and I protested. This is my subjective feeling. I wanted the light. That is, I was put to bed in the darkness. Later a door was opened, I remember that, and someone came in, picked me up, took me out in the light, and I felt how comfortable I was. For some reason that made a strong impression, so I remembered it. And that later, by calculation I found it was during the first year. But usually we don't remember back long. Now then, the life that follows is the karmic result of not only the life that preceded, but of the whole series of lives that we have passed through in a general way. This whole philosophy is so interlocked, you can't deal with one part of it without ultimately bringing in all the rest of it. So we won't go over into that beyond saying this, that the whole development is of every entity through a path which leads up through the mineral kingdom, the vegetable kingdom, the animal kingdom, and ultimately into the human. But all of this is in a generalized form, and as there is no individuation, there is no individual incarnation at this level. But it only at the human level, when something else comes in, is there individual reincarnation. The animal, it is said, returns to the group soul. But there is one exception for which it is said there has not been a provision in nature, and that is for the pet. that, by reason of his close association with man, becomes individuated to a degree at an earlier stage than is true of his fellow members of the same species. And thus there is a beginning of an entityhood that could reincarnate. Nature hasn't provided for this sort of thing, and it puts an obligation on man with respect to the after-death experiences of a pet that has come close to man. They're advanced in their evolution, but nature hasn't prepared for this, so it said. No, the story of an adept is different. Oh yes, it's not. Before we go into that, another feature. Both in the Mahatma letters and in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, an early experience is a swoon from which one awakens later. If there were conscious dying, one would have to avoid this swoon. Now, what is the nature of this swoon? We ordinarily think of a swoon as a blacking out of consciousness. But Sir John Woodruff, the authority on the Indian Tantra, in a foreword to the Tibetan Book of the Dead, advances this opinion based upon considerable knowledge, that it is not a blackout of consciousness, but what you might call a whiteout of the content of consciousness. It is a continuation of consciousness without content. Now, unless one were experienced, he might not recognize the fact that he was conscious if he had no content in consciousness, so that it would have the full value of a swoon. But it would be, in principle, very different from a blackout. Be fully aware, but there is no object whatsoever, no idea whatsoever. And to be aware and know that as consciousness would take some skill, so that it would be equivalent to a swoon, but not a blackout. There is a recovery later of memory, and the memory that's carried on to Devakan is not the full memory of the life here. The highest moments of our life are what carried through there, and those moments are elaborate. And whatever was associated with those moments would be carried through. So it is said in the Mahatma letters. Now the experience, oh yes, then there is the possibility of conscious dying. This would mean going through this tube consciously, knowing that you're going. In other words, avoiding the swoon. And then being aware of the processes that follow, with a continuum from the time you left the physical body. A sort of process that I would like myself to go through. I would strive for it. But if one were to die during sleep, this might be prevented by reason of the fact that he was asleep at the time. Conscious dying would mean that one chooses to die. And this is now not suicide, which involves a violence to the physical body, for there's no violence in the physical body. We're assuming the physical body is not in a condition where it can no longer function, that it's not forcing death, as it were, but the life has been lived through its full cycle, full karmic cycle, and yet the body is still good enough to continue for a while. And he chooses to leave it. Under what conditions could he do so legitimately? Well, I had an experience on the 13th of February 1979 that seemed to give me the key to that. That if one is in a state of balance between living and dying, there is such a state. I've been in it. So therefore I can report that it is. It's a state of balance. You're just as near the dying process as you are the living process. And just by a simple act of choice, will choice, you could go either way. You could affirm more life here, or you could choose to go over legitimately into the dying process. I would suggest that it's when you're in this state, the choice of death is entirely legitimate. And that then you would go through the process knowingly all the way and meet the clear light. Now, in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, one meets the clear light on, it is said, on three different levels. One first in the Chikkhai, then in the Chenmig, finally in the Siddha. And if he does not fuse with the clear light on any of these levels, then he goes either in to some heaven world, or if he has earned it, into a hell world, or else goes the way of rebirth. If one enters in the first stage, in the Chikkhai, which is said to happen at the moment of death, he fuses with the clear light. Now what do we mean by the clear light? Light is a symbol of consciousness. So I would suggest this, that the clear light is the consciousness that is known as fundamental realization, or by the Buddhists as enlightenment, the thing that happened to Buddha when he was under the Bodhi tree. That here, at the moment of death, everybody has the opportunity to take this. But it is said, unless he has been prepared for it by yogi practice in the life preceding, and is to the point where he is acquainted with it through that yogic practice, he will not succeed in fusing with this clear light. But if he fuses with the clear light, he becomes a Dharmakaya. Now, Dharmakaya is the innermost, most profound vehicle of a Buddha. If he goes on into the Chenmig and takes it there, he becomes a Sambhogakaya. If it's clear into the Chikkhai, not the Chikkhai, the Sigpa, it is a Nirmanakaya, which is the outermost vehicle of a Buddha. These three vehicles forming the Trikaya of a Buddha. There are certain discrepancies between the Voice of the Silence and the Tibetan Book of the Dead that I've taken up in a series of three tapes called the Trikaya. You have heard them at different times, and we will repeat them again because this is material on which we should be reminded. My impression is very strong that it's not so much a taking of the clear light as letting the clear light take you over to become plastic in its hands, to simply recognize it for what it is and to go forth to it. If you have not had experience of it, it may appall you, may frighten you, or something of that sort, in which case you wouldn't do it. But if you've had experience of it, as I've had back in August 7th, 1936, it might prove to be very attractive and be rather easy to take it. But in that, if one does, then he does not return here for rebirth unless it is chosen. He goes into the nirvanic withdrawal, has no further contact with the humanity of this world or of the other planets. When I was last over in Phoenix, I was reading again for the umpteenth time the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and I suddenly saw a possibility that as one goes through the transition, if his conceptuality is not clear, memory not clear, and the Tibetan Book of the Dead says it isn't, he might be in a more or less dreamy state. And even though he took the clear light, he could forget his resolve not to take the nirvanic withdrawal. Now, after 1936, I ultimately did resolve to take the nirvanic withdrawal, path of the nirvanic withdrawal from the nirvanic state, in line with the recommendations of the Voice of the Silence, which in its final chapter speaks of this move as the most virtuous one which one could take, for he would carry resources that could help humanity in a way that he never could have helped humanity before. And that humanity depends very greatly upon those brothers who have gone this way of the Arya path. It seemed to me the right thing to do, and I resolved to do it. But there's no one heard the resolution. I saw the possibility that I might be shunted off into the nirvanic path without my intending it that way. So I called for a meeting with Irma with the definite intention of speaking to Tharchan on this subject. I got reassurance. That was the most valuable thing. He seemed to take seriously the possibility that I saw. But he said, one of the brothers would meet me there, so I don't have to worry about that. He asked me specifically, do you choose to take incarnation? Very asking of that implied that he considered I had the power to go the other way. And I said, I so choose. Therefore, it is now recorded, and I shall return later to this plane. Knowing perfectly well that this is an undesirable kind of life, as compared to the nirvanic withdrawal, but that it's a work to be done. Now coming to some things that are immediate and personal. I'm 92 and only a little over 3 months from 93. It's a long life, and the cycle of transition is normally not far away. Well, one clairvoyant had predicted death at the cycle of 91. I don't know who she or he was. It's probably she. It's one that was told of by Dr. Blue Joy. Irma Pounds saw some years ago termination in the cycle 91 to 92, but she later saw a possible termination at 96. As I'm closing out the 92, there's the implication of a possible crisis in which termination could take place, and I would very greatly welcome termination, as most of my interests now are on the other side. If that takes place, since I no longer have a companion to do, to carry out these directions, I make this especially to whoever is living with me at the time. If I do not come out in the morning and I'm found no longer breathing in bed, straighten the body, advise Dr. Christensen as soon as possible. I have been checked by him every month on purpose for this end, so he can write a certificate of death if he's seen me within a month. Thus avoid the mandatory autopsy that the government requires, which is something that I very much want to avoid. I think that could be very objectionable with regress, as it would disturb the recapitulation in the body. Dress the organism up in my lecture suit, the present suit, and place it out there on that sofa where Gertrude's body was for 24 hours, playing the same music, Parsifal and the German Requiem, with the lights burning all night, with minimum disturbance of mundane concerns here. Then the turning over of the organism to Mr. Sullivan. I've already left instructions with him some time ago, arranging for this period of 24 hours, and also with Dr. Christensen. They're both agreed to it. I arranged for it in the case of Gertrude, and also in the case of Sharifa. The doctors and the morticians both are agreeable. You have to deal with both of them there. After 24 hours, Sullivan will pick up the organism, and direction must be reaffirmed that it goes the way of cremation. I don't know how soon, naturally. I have a feeling of intimation that I may not see 93, and an experience that John had left him with the same impression. I'm leaving this as instruction. I do not have a wife to whom I could leave the instruction, so I have to leave it here with you. Whether I can make any correlation from the other side and communicate through some channel, I don't know. Channels exist, and this is the real thing. This is not mediumship, which is negative. It's a positive counterpart. Only one with certain powers could function through a channel. And if that becomes possible, I believe I will channel what I may know. At any rate, this instruction I leave with you, particularly with John, who'll be here, that if he finds the body that way, to get to Dr. Christensen, have him come up, write the certificate of death, then advise Sullivan, the mortician, who has already instructions, and I'll verify whether he has them at hand, perhaps this week. And this is what I wanted to say, partly giving the general picture as I understand it, and partly the specific direction. I look forward to it. I feel a little bit like a person going out on the stage who has stage fright. but because it'll be a new experience. Although I'm not so sure that experience of February 13th is a kind of preparation. Also an earlier one, September 7th, 1978, I woke up and heard the agonal breath. That's the rattle breath, it usually means dead. I figured I was dying, and I stopped the process and then kicked myself afterwards because I really wanted to go in. And so that, after all, it's a journey. It's not a termination. And I've taken many journeys with the automobile here. I like to learn of the country that I'm going into beforehand, its geography, things about it beforehand, and then verify them by subsequent experiencing of them. I prefer it that way. I don't like to take it all new. And so I'm going into the subject of death as much as I can, because as a preparation for a very interesting journey that isn't far in the future, so far as I'm concerned, in any case, because age determines that fact. Now, if you have any comments or questions, the floor is open to you.